Successful people learn how to make their mind work for them. I'm David Nagel, and this is the Successful Mind Podcast.
Welcome to Inside the Episode. Today, David and I are going inside episode 171, The Conflict in Our Subconscious Mind. So, David, you started off the episode with the question, is my subconscious all bad? And you talked about the battle you see quite often and the questions you get as it relates to success specifically is where the mind gets the better of a person, whether it's through stopping, self-sabotage, or a myriad of other patterns that they learned along the way. Can you talk a little bit more about the subconscious mind just in general? Because I think we can never hear it too many times as it relates to how we live our lives.
Yeah. So one of the important things to know about the subconscious mind is how does it operate? So here's, I'm going to just give you a brief rundown because the subconscious mind and the conscious mind operate very differently, but in coordination with each other. So the subconscious mind does not have the ability to reason. It can't think, it can't evaluate the way that we can with our conscious mind. It doesn't have the ability to reject anything either. So rejection is done with our conscious thought. If an idea gets past your conscious mind, it goes into your subconscious mind and it stays there, it becomes fixed. It's like a little blip of information that becomes fixed and then it replicates itself like a virus in your subconscious mind. Prior to the age of 7, the conscious mind is not developed in a way where it can reject information. So that comes as the brain begins to develop over a period of time. And actually, human beings go through an extremely long period of time with this. For women, it's about to age 22, and for men, it's like age 25, before that part of our brain firms up and become solid. So that's where you see impulsive behavior, emotionally, whatever. There is the ability of an idea to get into our conscious mind, then boom, it wants to express itself immediately. So it doesn't have the ability to reject. It doesn't have the ability to reason. Anything that goes in sticks and it becomes fixed and it starts to form a pattern of habits or a paradigm. And it doesn't have the ability to differentiate between what is real and what is imagined. So if you imagine something over and over and over and you get emotionally involved in that image in your mind, you're impressing it on or into your subconscious mind. It doesn't know the difference between that and what's fake. And there's been amazing tests that have been done around this for years. They'll take basketball players and they'll have them imagine in their mind practicing doing free throws over and over and over and over again. And then they'll have people that actually practice it and do it for real. And the outcome is almost identical, and sometimes it's actually better because they're imagining themselves doing a perfect free throw. So then after a period of time doing that, they bring the two individuals together and they say they see who's better. The person with that just did it in their imagination is usually just as good or even a little better than the people that did it for real. So as we're developing, there's a lot of ideas that go into our mind that we then engage our imagination around. And if you think about any child, they're constantly using their imagination, but they're imagining what's in their surroundings or something that's triggering a thought in their surroundings. And then that goes in their subconscious mind and it becomes fixed. So if we're getting a lot of negative messages about success in life or the things that are parts of success, then we grow up with the repetition of that in our mind and it just expresses itself in our life.
Which is why you're such a staunch advocate for people to change the way they talk about themselves. When you say, yeah, you stop saying that, stop saying that. When a person continues to say negative things about themselves, the mind itself doesn't know the difference. They're perceiving that that is technically happening. So you're going to continue to replicate the same pattern over and over and over again. So one of the first things I remember, you know, you telling Steph was, you know, stop saying that, stop saying I can't, or I won't, or I'm unable to, and flip that, because the more you can say it, the more you can kind of work with the plasticity of the brain, even though you're significantly older,
right,
to try and rewire that. Cause you can rewire it, right? You can
absolutely
change.
Yep, absolutely.
Everybody can change.
At any age.
At any age.
There's people that do this in their 80s. There's age is not as an, not an excuse. And the brain is a muscle like any other muscle in the body, in the sense that the more that you use it, the better it operates and the better it functions. And I mean, we know this now, but we didn't always know this. So there's literally companies out there that create different kind of games and challenges that exercise different parts of the brain so that it keeps it limber, so to speak, so that you stay sharp. Here's something interesting most people don't know. Everybody has a perfect memory. But if you hear over and over again that you don't have a good memory, your brain will take on that pattern and you will start to forget things.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Everybody has a perfect memory.
That's amazing. Yeah, I wouldn't even think about that because I'm one of those people that says, oh, I don't remember names. I'm always reaffirming. Well,
I do it too. But you were somehow along the way you took that habit on and then it became a reality, right? You can change it.
Yeah.
You can change. Harry Lorraine did tremendous work in that area. He wrote a book called The Memory Book. Harry Lorraine and Jerry Lucas. And they did, and I never met them, but my mentor worked with them pretty extensively for a period of time. And Harry would, like, they would do an event with 3,000 people. He would remember everybody's name that walked in the door, and he would stand on the stage and tell everybody what their name was. He memorized the Bible. Like,
wow.
Yeah. I mean,
that's amazing.
It's technique.
It is. And you can go down a rabbit hole. And we're going to talk about brain here in a moment. I'm going to tease that. I've got something I wrote down here. But before we get into that, let's talk a little bit about spiritual DNA. You mentioned that in this episode. I love this concept. How can a person tap into that spiritual DNA in order to move us forward? Maybe what is spiritual DNA as a refresh? And then what can we do to tap into that to really move us to what we truly desire?
Spiritual DNA is the DNA that we all have that is trying to guide us into our purpose in life. And it is in conflict with what we're taught about life. Because the values and the meanings that you need to associate with things from that aspect are totally different than the ones that keep us safe in life. And like, we can go down a rabbit hole with safety, but I've said many times that nobody's safe. I mean, you're never safe. Safety is a freaking illusion that we buy into and we believe it because it makes us feel less anxious about life. But if we actually learned the right skill sets and how to follow the spiritual side of ourselves, we would not feel unsafe because we would actually understand how to overcome the problems that make us feel unsafe, right?
Sure.
So the way that we tap into it is we start following. So I tell people to look in a couple different places. Number one, our secret thoughts. The secret thoughts are the thoughts that we think about, kind of like in our imagination, that we don't tell anybody about, things we'd like to be, do, or have in life. And we generally keep those pretty close to the vest, right? And the reason is because sometimes we have shame around them. Sometimes we don't think that they're good. Sometimes we don't think they're holy enough. Or what does that make me if I want to do that or express this or whatever it is? There's a tremendous amount of information in that secret place inside of every single person, and every person has it. The other thing is, what do you feel pulled toward and what do you feel repelled by, right? So I think that people have to get to the place where they really can honestly say to themselves, am I happy with this? Do I like this? And the reason is because very often what we do is we convince ourselves that we're happy because we're so fucking miserable, we can't stay in that headspace for long. So we try to be happy in something that we're absolutely not happy in, but we actually convince ourselves that we are somewhat happy. And we see people do this all the time. Eventually, what ends up happening with most of them is that something happens to jog them out of it a little bit, and it ends up collapsing in some way. But they still have to figure out what does make them happy. So I say, take a look at your life, examine every area of your life, and ask yourself, if you had a magic wand, you could create it any way that you would want it to be. There were no obstacles. You didn't have to worry about what other people think. Money and resources aren't an issue. You don't have to tell anybody what this is either. What would you create your life to look like, right? And then if that's different than what it looks like right now, you got an issue.
Sure.
Right? It's time to start exploring, because that's actually what you're really supposed to have. And you might think, your person might go, there's no way. It's so vastly different. Like, there's no way for me. It's a complete fantasy. But where did it come from? It's coming from inside of you.
And follow it.
Follow it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's great. You talked in the episode about when making a change, it is crucial, to ask yourself, what do you want? And I think that speaks to what you just mentioned, that pull. Do you remember asking that of yourself early on when you were first starting this journey, and how impactful that what do you want question was to rewire your mind to make the changes that were inside of you?
Yeah, I sure do. The first time that I did it was when I was on the forklift on the dock, and I was thinking to myself about what I wanted. And I've tried to actually remember where this part came from. I'm not sure, but I must have been listening to a tape or something, and somebody said something about coming up with 100 goals. And I felt actually ashamed that I could only think of 3 at the time. And I was like, what's wrong with me? I literally couldn't tell you anything else that I really wanted. I could not allow myself to want. Which was a huge wake-up call. Like, what the hell is wrong with me that all these people want something so much more? And I want a house. I want a fishing boat. I want a place to retire. That was the extent of my want at the time. So I had shut all of that down around myself. And it was beginning to explore that and start where I was and go after it like one piece at a time that then opened up the floodgates for all the different things that I actually wanted to do. And getting to the place where I consciously understood that it was a perfectly good thing to desire and to want.
Yeah, so this is great for me specifically because I'm a person who doesn't want for much. And I'd love for my floodgates to open up. Like, even, you know, around like, oh, what do you want for a present? Or what do you want for this? I always defer to other people. And when you were talking about that, I was thinking about, well, that's how I was raised. You don't want for anything. You get what you get and you don't throw a fit. I used to say that all the time to my kids.
Yeah.
I used to say that to the kids I taught. You know, it's this phrase we learned in kindergarten and it was drilled into me. And I love people that can just say, oh, I want 50 things or 100 things right off the top of their head. I'm like you back then. I can only think of maybe a couple. And even that, I'm like, well, I don't really know, you know, so I want my floodgates to open. But right now, that is a struggle that I deal with in the middle part of my life about what is it that you truly want? What do you feel pulled towards? So I don't know how to shift that. But I think like what you were just talking about, you just have to, you got to just put yourself in that situation and ask for it.
Well, you do. You start with what you do know that you want, right? So, and then you give yourself permission to go after the things that you already do know that you want. I don't care. Maybe it's a new pair of running shoes
yeah.
or a more expensive pair of running shoes
sure.
or a different car or a trip somewhere or something that you do for yourself. But you start where you are and you say, okay, what do I know that I want that I'm not taking action on? And then you start doing that because then it becomes a habit. And the more you do it, the more you begin to open that up for yourself.
Yeah. And I think the key is give yourself the permission.
Give yourself
I think a lot
permission.
Of times you say it and then you stop yourself. You don't say it. You think it, you should say it. You stop because, well, that would be asking too much of someone. You're not giving yourself permission.
Right.
I love that. That's great. All right. In the episode, you talked about unknown equals danger. And that the vast majority of fears are learned. We've heard that on this podcast several times. And the fear of the unknown, is something that we are primed for. And this caused me to go down a very distracting rabbit hole when you were teaching. You mentioned the Oscar-winning documentary Free Solo.
Right.
And just if you haven't seen it, what a ride that was. Alex Hanold, the gentleman who's featured in the documentary, who free soloed El Capitan, and his fellow free climbers, they're working on a whole new level. Like something that I winced so many times watching this.
Oh.
Like I looked at still pictures while you were doing the
yeah.
teaching and I could feel it like coursing through my body as if I was just looking over the ledge of what these guys do without any ropes. And what's interesting about that, the rabbit hole you can go down here is that their brains don't work like everyone else's,
right.
which is what you talked about in the episode. And I went in and I pulled out an article that was featured in Popular Science by Jane Joseph, who's a neuroscience professor from the Medical University of South Carolina. And she said, and I quote, anatomically, Hanold's brain is normal, but his amygdala, historically considered the brain's fear detector, didn't respond to our images like an average sensation seeker's did. The pictures weren't intense enough to stimulate that part of his brain. That could be because he regularly faces real fear and has conditioned himself to distinguish it from anxiety. Feeling scared is an appropriate response to an immediate threat, such as hanging off a cliff with no protection whatsoever. Anxiety happens when a non-threatening stimulus, such as imagining roaches or rotting food, triggers an association with danger. As an extreme risk taker, Hanold knows the difference. Couple things out of that that was new to me. The concept of sensation seeking, which I love that, and I know it's been around since, I think it was coined in 1964 in a study, but it's the amygdala piece that fascinates me because my amygdala doesn't work like Mr. Hanold's does.
Right.
I am risk averse, but you told me to stop saying that, so I'm not going to say that anymore after this. But it really got me thinking about Free Solo and what you can learn by watching that. What was your takeaway from that, since it was just an amazing ride you went on?
I looked at it and I was thinking to myself, you know, what is it in this person that allows him to do this? Because it is the ultimate, you can't make a mistake, right? And it's in that situation, it's a mistake you can't recover from. There's no recovery.
It's one and done.
One and done. Yeah. It's over. You're going down and you're not going to survive the fall. And then when they were talking about that, if you watch the movie, I think they present the question was, did his brain adapt this way because of his environment, or is it something functionally not the way that it should be? And was he born that way? And I don't think they know the answer to that yet. But here's what I do know is that the more risk that we take and the more that we show up and show our amygdala or our subconscious mind that we can handle the risk, then the warning lights start to come down.
Right.
It's not as sensitive, right? And which is a very good thing because I say this all the time, safety's for kids, not for adults, because kids don't know how to evaluate a situation. They don't know how to respond to a situation. They don't know that they could accidentally put themselves in danger. Human beings, or I'm sorry, adults, we know, right? And if we don't know, we can find out. So being that we can do that, there should be no reason for us to have a fear other than nobody ever taught us that, to make that transference from being a child to real world risk. And understanding how do we traverse that in our life so that we don't get hurt. And the other thing is removing the judgment from it, because there is the whole, okay, here's risk, here's reward, here's a risk, here's consequence of the risk if you make a mistake, is that, you know, everybody has to look at how do they view the consequence? What's important to them as far as like how much are they willing to lose in order to do what it is that they what they truly want to do in life? But then you have the shame around it. So that's where the idea of what other people think of you starts to come into the process. And what literally happens in that moment is that it's like you've taken the consequence and you've made it into something that it's not. Oh, I'm a bad person because I made a bad business deal. I'm a bad person because I picked the wrong partner. I'm a bad person because I did something stupid or I said something that was stupid and embarrassing. And that's where we use shame to actually stop us. So that's another fear that then comes in, which is really, that gets down to like the fear of abandonment and what other people are going to think of us. And it opens up a whole nother box of worms. But what, you know, it was... It's interesting because I think what it does is it showed me, here's what the extreme risk is. Like there's no, even if you think about the most dangerous jobs in the world, right? Most of them have some sort of risk reward balance to it. Not this one.
No.
Not this one.
There's no safety net here.
No. And the reward does not, there's no logic to the reward about going against that risk, you know, allowing that you yourself to have that risk in your life. But I also think, then I come from like, well, what is the spiritual truth around this? I think that the universe, God, whatever you want to call it, puts people like this in our life in during different periods of time in evolution as we grow as a human species. And we need people to look at those people sometimes to jar our thinking to keep moving forward and not move back. So what's interesting is that I've actually studied this a bit. You can see every time our society goes into some kind of crisis, there's a superhero that shows up that we become fixated on. Most people don't realize this, but like during the Vietnam War in the 60s and 70s, it's one of the reasons why Evel Knievel was so big.
Right.
Because he was like this superhero that was saying that we could overcome anything. You know, I mean, we all know that he had a dysfunctional backstory, sure, which nobody really knew at the time, but he was trying to stand for something bigger. And he gave us, it wasn't just entertainment, it was defying the odds. It was being a daredevil. It was going further in your life. So there's these things that come out that are very fascinating to counterbalance the negative that we get exposed to.
Yeah, real life superheroes for sure.
Yeah,
Evel Knievel. Shout out to Butte, Montana. All right.
Yeah.
What I loved about what you just talked about, and we'll close with this with Free Solo, is that you don't have to, you know, scale a cliff without a rope or jump out of a plane. You can face your fears in other ways with less consequences. And I'm thinking about the people out there who may be struggling in their business and are afraid to ask people to buy their services because they don't think they're good enough. And you brought that judgment piece in, which I love. So there's interesting parallels with that documentary and with what people go through on a daily life. If you consider the fact that what you're going through, yes, fear is fear and you're feeling it and it's real, but there's ways around that that are not nearly as bad. Like you have a safety net. You can say, I would like to sell you my services. The person says no and hangs up on you. Okay, that was a no. Let's go to the next one. So many people stop at that no. You do have a safety net, but I understand that the fear is fear and people need to get over that. And that's what the successful mind is all about. You know, rewiring yourself to be able to say, look, I understand. I see this for what it is. And the truth is there's somebody out there who does want my services and I'm going to keep going until I get there.
Right. Yeah.
I love that. Yeah. I love that piece. It's just, you know, you don't see a guy climbing up El Capitan and think, well, my life's kind of like his. It is. I mean, we all have that in our brains.
Yeah.
You have the ability to face your fears and come out the other side. So a little bit of a tangent there, but we'll close with this. You did mention, again, episode 78, 7 years of study. For those of you who are big time listeners to this podcast, you will have listened to this many times, but I will have you encourage everyone to go back and listen to that once again, because it's a model of what it takes to make significant change in your life. And David, you know, if you truly desire change, then that's where you should start, because it shows where you came from and how you honed your own successful mind over all these intense 7 years of study and beyond. And it was full immersion how you did that. And I think as a way we walk off with this episode, it was perfect for you to talk a little bit about what it takes to make significant change, because significant change for you has brought you here today.
Absolutely.
So I think it's pretty cool. So yeah, this was a great episode. Thanks so much for coming inside.
You got it.
Thanks for listening to the Successful Mind Podcast. And if you like what you heard and you want to know more, go to davidnagel.com/freestuff.